Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Pogrid State. My name is Matthew Ogden.
And I am Sam Brungo. Today, we're joined by social media manager Ryan Parsons, who is also one of our football beat writers. And we're going to talk some footy. Last week, we had our first win of the season. Big, huge dub for Penn State. Maybe Penn State's back in Michigan, in Ann Arbor. So, Parsons, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on again.
So Penn State is on track for perhaps its worst season in, 20 years, but Michigan still sucks. So Ryan, tell us basically about what went down on Saturday and how it was basically a battle of who's worse.
Yeah, I mean, everyone expected coming into it to be a battle of who's worse, but I mean, it ended up being a pretty fun game. I mean, just watching Penn State being able to like put an offense together was fun to watch. Something that, you take for granted a lot when they couldn't do it the first five games of the season. Keevon Lee looked awesome. Parker Washington looked awesome. Clifford wasn't really back to his old self yet, but he looked a lot better. Didn't turn the ball over, which was huge. Defense held strong when it needed to be. So just all around was a pretty solid game.
Yeah, you mentioned that there was no turnovers, and when I was just looking at the stats, it's very refreshing to see Sean Clifford's name with a zero next to it for interceptions, even though he didn't throw any touchdowns. It's nice to see that. What do you think was the difference in this week from our first five games where we had multiple turnovers in every single game?
I honestly think it was just a matter of things finally clicking. He didn't start the Iowa game. The game before that, he got the second half off. I think that kind of reset him almost. I mean, against Iowa, when he came back in for Levis, he did throw two interceptions, but it was kind of in garbage time anyway. So I think he just needed that time off to like watch things from a distance from the sideline, and that was able to get him back into the swing of things. And also just getting used to a new offensive coordinator. Kirk Soracco was hired before this year. They didn't have that long of an offseason, so I think now he's starting to settle in to a new scheme on offense, and he's looking a lot better.
I think Sean Clifford being benched for Will Levis for a game and a half, and I think in a way it was exactly what he needed. I think it kind of lit a fire up under him and gave him that mentality that he was lacking back. Do you see this at all? Like, how do you think Sean has performed since he was seated for Levis?
Yeah, I mean, he always would say during like press conferences and stuff, like, oh, I support Will. Like, it's, we all both prepare the same way each week. But I mean, if you're benched, like, that's not a good thing. Like, it definitely, in some extent, like, he was probably pissed off. Probably didn't, obviously didn't show it a lot, but I think it did light something under him. You could see after he scored that first rushing touchdown against Michigan, I mean, he was pretty hyped up. I think it felt really good for him to be able to be back in a sense. So yeah, I think the benching definitely did help him. Obviously it didn't work, him being benched. So I think him being back gave him some more confidence as well.
In the rushing game, obviously this week we saw Keevon Lee really emerge as the number one running back on this team that has already this season lost Noah Kane and Journey Brown, and this week we were without Devin Ford, who had been filling in thus far. Then in the passing game, we saw new kind of player Isaac Lutz come in and make some plays. Jahan Dotson didn't really have as many catches as he's been accustomed to so far this year, and Brenton Strange, who had been filling in for Pat Freiermuth since he got hurt, only had one catch for 4 yards. So what's going on with the running backs room and the wide receivers room, and what can we look forward to the rest of the season?
Yeah, so I think Penn State expects Devin Ford to come back against Rutgers. I wouldn't be surprised if him and Keevon Lee get the same amount of carries, or even if Lee gets more carries. Even when Ford was the starter, when Kane and Journey Brown were out, he really didn't make that big of an impact. Even Lee and even Keziah Holmes were guys you would say like, wow, like, especially as true freshmen, like, they look really good. So I think they might stick with the hot hand, still give Lee the majority of the carries. But also with James Franklin in this offense, you never really know what to expect. And sometimes they do the illogical thing. But in terms of wide receivers, I think teams might have started to figure out Jahan Dotson. You see that a lot. Like, guys will have really strong first couple of games once teams have a good amount of film on them. They'll kind of simmer down a little bit. That doesn't mean he's a bad wide receiver by any means, but it just means that he's been locked down a little bit more, but that has mean guys like Isaac Lutz and Parker Washington have gotten more passes, and they've been really good as well. So being able to have that diverse set of receivers gives Penn State a lot more weapons and a lot more choices on offense.
Let's switch it over to the defensive side of the ball and talk about their performance against Michigan. The front line had a difficult time containing Hassan Haskins for the majority of the game, but Penn State's pass defense looked pretty stellar, to the point of Michigan actually switching out their starting QB, Cade McNamara, for Joe Milton a little bit. So, Ryan, tell us a little bit about how their pass defense looked on Saturday.
The pass defense, by a long shot, had their best passing performance of the entire year. I think they only gave up 112 yards, which Michigan, I think, had well over 190, 200 yards in every other game. So just being able to shut that down. They didn't sack the quarterback, but the defensive line was putting pressure on them all game. So they were really able to make plays when they needed to be. Limited the explosive plays, which has been a big thing all year, especially against Maryland. Just like big passing plays would really just hurt the morale of the defense. So this week, they just looked really good stopping the air attack.
And to wrap up talking about Michigan here a little bit, let's give a MVP out for the offense, the defense, and the special teams.
Offensive, definitely Kevon Lee just looked amazing. A true freshman just stepping up when he needed to. On defense, either Joey Porter Jr. or Ellis Brooks. I might just have to go with Ellis Brooks just because he led the way with the most tackles on the night. Came up with a few big stops on fourth down. And then on special teams, Drew Hartlob 100% recovered that muffed punt by Michigan and just gave Penn State a huge momentum swing early in the game. Hartlob is one of the fastest guys on the team, if not the fastest guy on the team. So him able to make that play was pretty big for Penn State.
So I know before Penn State pulled out the win on Saturday, a lot of people were dreading the game against Rutgers that's going to take place this Saturday. I'm sure a lot of people have been fearing, oh no, is this the year that Penn State finally loses to Rutgers? So Ryan, basically give us a little preview of that game and basically what Penn State needs to do to pull off two wins in a row.
Rutgers has only beaten Penn State twice ever. The first time was in like 1918 or something, and the second time was in 1989. So just recently, especially in the James Franklin era, Rutgers have just been snuffed out by Penn State. But this year, obviously, things are a lot different. This is the worst Penn State has been in a while, and this is the best Rutgers has been in a while. Under Greg Schiano now, the Scarlet Knights, they look a lot more excited to play. They're very energetic on the field. So this is definitely their best shot of beating Penn State. I don't think they will. I think Penn State is finally getting things to click and getting things together. But it's probably going to be a lot more of an entertaining game than people would have thought coming into this year.
So Rutgers started out the season looking pretty hot. They had a 11-point win over Michigan State. Then they came out and they had back-to-back ranked opponents in Indiana and Ohio State, which they lost both of those. And then they came out last 2 weeks with a win against Purdue, late game comeback, and then a overtime loss to Michigan. Just what are we looking at this week as far as Rutgers? Because they seem a little inconsistent. And I feel like Penn State has had kind of a similar season to them, except Penn State has done the opposite. You know what I mean? Like Rutgers usually sucks and has kind of no standard, and Penn State is usually good and has a high standard. And both of them, I think, have exceeded expectations, both positively and negatively.
Rutgers is definitely hot right now. I mean, they took Michigan. I mean, Michigan's not that good of a team, but they took Michigan to overtime and then beat Purdue with their backup quarterback. Noah Vedral was their starter through most of the season. He looked pretty solid. He was hurt against Michigan. And then they had Art Sikowski come in against Purdue, and he looked pretty solid. They also have another guy named Johnny Langan, who's the third stringer. He's similar to Will Levis, just like a really good rusher. I think he had 21 carries in the second half against Purdue, and also a pretty solid passer. So they have a very diverse offense. They have a lot of weapons. Obviously, only have two wins, so all the pieces aren't coming together, but they're a hot team right now. Penn State is also as hot as they've been this year right now. So it's possible we're seeing both teams playing their best football right now, which could be a fun matchup on Saturday.
All right. Well, that was our Michigan recap and our Rutgers preview. But Ryan, before you go, this episode is being recorded on Thursday night, so we have to talk about a little Wednesday afternoon football action that took place yesterday. Trace McSorley, throw it on a dime, like I ain't even trying. Just a kid from Briarwoods, I'm wearing number 9. Met Coach Franklin down at Vandy, flipped to Happy Valley. Now I'm coming back and got the natty on my mind. They can't touch my deep ball, every game I'm scoring. I'm your favorite quarterback, they call me Trace McSorley. Rep that blue and white, you know I do it for the glory. Baker won the Heisman, next up Trace McSorley. So, yeah, Ryan, tell us about Trace McSorley getting his first real NFL action as at quarterback.
I mean, that was just awesome, right? Like, it was just so fun to watch.
It was incredible.
A Wednesday night game in 2020, RG3 goes down, Lamar Jackson has the coronavirus, and who but Trace McSorley is the third stringer to come in. I was very excited when he came back in. My house is all Penn State fans, so we were all very excited when he came in. First drive didn't look great, had that one rush, but the second drive, you know, a 70-yard touchdown pass to Hollywood Brown, like the internet was just going crazy. Everyone's a Trace fan since he's become kind of a meme on TikTok. Everyone was just rooting for him. It was just a very fun last quarter. It was a shame the Steelers came up and ran the clock out at the end there. Sam, I know you're a Steelers fan, but I think everyone was kind of rooting for Trace to get a shot to lead the Ravens back in the end of that game.
You mentioned I am a big Steelers fan. My whole family's from Pittsburgh, but growing up in State College, it's kind of weird. Like when McSorley came in, I was like, oh, this is awesome. Like I get to see McSorley and like, I hope he does well and stuff. I don't want him to beat my team. And he came in and had that 70-yard touchdown. And me and my mom and dad were just sitting there and we're like, ah, shit. Like, yeah, good for him. And then I started to get a little nervous because I was a little more nervous about him than RG3. So, I mean, it was pretty cool. I wish it wasn't against the Steelers, but it was cool to see him. And I hope that he moves forward as the number two. I mean, I think RG3 sucks. And I think Trace has he's got a little bit of talent, you know. I was a little worried because I've seen the comebacks that he's done at Penn State, so.
Yeah, McSorley finished the day with 77 passing yards, 70 of which came on that touchdown. And he also tacked on 16 rushing yards, including a very crucial 4th-and-2 play that Trace used the legs for. And he also now leads the NFL with a 121.5 passer rating if you stipulate a minimum 6 attempts. So Trace McSorley is the league leader in passer rating, folks. Ryan Parsons, thank you so much for joining again.
Yep, thanks, guys, for having me. It was a pleasure.
That was our football talk with social media manager Ryan Parsons. Joining us now to talk about some men's basketball is basketball beat writer Owen Abbey. Owen, how's it going, man?
It's going good. How are you guys?
Fantastic. Back and forth game between VCU. So can you just talk a little bit about Penn State basketball and how their season has showed up so far? They're 2-0 on the season. And what's our outlook so far?
Yeah, Penn State has played, besides, I believe, the first half against VMI, has played surprisingly well for a team that hasn't played since March. The VCU game was definitely a game where you would expect it to be close, but Penn State really played VCU well. Defensively, they were really, really solid. Offensively, there were issues besides Seth Lundy having a career night with 32 points. Defensively, they were just really quick, stole the ball a lot, caused turnovers, and that's the kind of game that you are going to have to expect from Penn State. They're going to be a really solid defensive team. They're going to be fast. They're going to push the tempo. They'll be a very up-tempo team. And when looking at Penn State offensive perspective, it will live and die by that three-point shot. Miles Dredd missing his first four three-pointers and making the one three-pointer that mattered the most is what Penn State's going to have to expect for their whole season. So it's those kinds of shots and those kinds of possessions that are pretty much going to be the defining factor of Penn State's offense.
Yeah. So I want to talk about, you know, the beginning of the season. You know, I remember their very first media day, there was a bit of a small little, you know, controversy with some players talking about how they missed the recently departed Pat Chambers. But at the same time, like, while it seemed like this was kind of a team in disarray, they also displayed a confidence in their abilities. Talk about like the difference between kind of like the off the court controversy and how strong they look on the court.
The players at Penn State have really shown that they can separate the two. How Penn State has handled the situation with regards to the players, it was very evident in media day how the players felt. You gotta give credit to Jim Ferry for being able to have them focus on the game and look like that distraction of Pat Chambers resigning and the whole fallout from that wasn't even an issue for them playing the game. So that's something that you gotta give credit for to the coaching staff. Jim Ferry did a really good job on that. The transition from Pat Chambers to Jim Ferry is something that's also very helpful for this team. Jim Ferry, being the offensive coach under Pat Chambers, basically knows the offense, didn't really need to change much of the offense. Assistant coach Keith Ergo is still the defensive coordinator, still a defensive coach. So from a playbook perspective, from a scheme perspective, really nothing has changed. And that's a huge benefit, especially when you have this outside noise of what happened to Pat Chambers and how that was handled internally.
You touched on this briefly. Did we see any distinct differences between Jim Ferry's team and between Pat Chambers' team? You mentioned that he's in-house hire and Keith Ergo is still there. One of the main differences I saw was just the amount of times that Jamari Wheeler was shooting threes, especially. And is that because of the coaching change, or do you think that that might be because of a little bit of offensive absence with the loss of also Lamar Stevens, who is now in the NBA with the Cleveland Cavaliers?
I think it's a mix of both. I think Jim Ferry is allowing more people to shoot the ball, in part because they have to, because, as you said, Lamar Stevens no longer there. He's in the NBA. Mike Watkins is playing professionally overseas. So there is that offensive void, which will allow for players like Jamari Wheeler in game one and Seth Lundy in game two to really step up and play. I think the main difference that I've noticed between the two coaches is that this team is playing faster, and they are running the ball up the court faster than they had in the past because they have more speed as a team to really score. So like what I mean by that is that when you have Lamar Stevens and Mike Watkins playing constantly, they're not the fastest people on the team. They're the best scorers, but they're not fast. So you set and you take your time. Whereas when you have Jamari Wheeler, Isaiah Brockington, Sam Sessoms all out on the court, that's a fast lineup. They're going to breeze by a lot of players. And that gives a chance to have these open threes, and people like Jamari Wheeler and Sam Sessoms will get those looks behind the arc. Seth Lundy as well. The other big thing is, and this is no fault of Jim Ferry's, but the lack of big man depth, which is going to force them to play that kind of game where you basically only have John Hara in the paint. And John Hara is a good player, but he's not known for his offense. And that changes how the game is played, where Lamar Stevens and Mike Watkins were the focal point. Now it's a perimeter focal point.
You mentioned transfer from Binghamton, Sam Sessoms. Can you talk a little bit? I know that in the first game, Jamari Wheeler kind of got the spotlight. And in the second game, obviously, Seth Lundy with his 30-point game. Can we talk a little bit about the addition of Sam Sessoms and what he's meant to this Penn State starting five and also other new faces that we've seen in the program so far this year?
Sam Sessoms is a huge, huge addition to this team. He is not only fast like Jamari Wheeler, but can really score the ball. And not just from like a jump shot perspective, he is very strong, can take it to the paint, really quick, really crafty with creating shots. He is a kind of guy who can also steal the ball, which is a nice added presence for defense. He's really a key player in how Penn State has been successful to this point. He was the second leading scorer last night with 17 points. And, you know, of course, Seth Lundy is going to get all the talk, but Sessom scoring 17 points is nothing to sneeze at. He is a critical addition to this team and how Coach Ferry plays the game. And the other new faces, we really haven't seen much of them. Jim Ferry has played with a three-man bench for the most part. Coming off the bench is Sessoms, Miles Dredd, and Trent Buttrick. There's four new freshmen that have really not gotten much playing time, so it's unclear what they really bring to the table. We can only listen to what the players talk about at media availability. That's all we really have to go on with the freshmen. I wish Coach Ferry played them more, but he has his reasons. There have been two close games in a row, at least from a first half perspective against BMI. And it makes sense why he doesn't want to play them just yet, but it sucks that we haven't really seen what they bring to the table.
Which freshman do you are you looking to see the most? I know you're a big Abdu Simbila fan.
I am, and he and Caleb Dorsey are the two that I'm looking forward to seeing the most. Simbila is a guy who John Hara at Media Day raved about. He thought that he was, you know, his wingspan is really big and that he could be a very, very talented player. He's a raw player, but he's a very talented player. And Simbila's importance is very significant because out of the three traditional big men that we have, he's the only one that's not a senior. John Hara and Trent Buttrick are both seniors. So Simbila is going to be a big part of Penn State moving forward. So he's someone that I want to see more of and what he brings to the table in terms of what is his skill set. And then Caleb Dorsey, he's a 6'7" guard. And that is something that intrigues me a lot, especially in a team that doesn't have height. So that is something that I want to see how he plays and also what he brings to the table. I don't know what these guys are capable of because I haven't seen much of them. So those two are the one that piqued my interest the most.
Let's talk a little bit about this season, our upcoming slate. So this weekend we have Seton Hall, who is a pretty prestigious basketball program. And then a couple days later, next week, we have number 16 Virginia Tech coming in, and they'll be playing right before we start our Big Ten slate for the year. So what are we expecting from Penn State basketball, and how are we looking throughout the season after we had kind of a little touch and go first couple games?
Yeah, I think Seton Hall is going to be an interesting game. Seton Hall traditionally is a really, really good team. And so far, they have not lived up to how good they can be. So that is going to be an interesting game for Penn State to see if they can really hold up or hold a candle to Seton Hall, because there are high expectations for that Seton Hall team. And then moving forward to Virginia Tech, Virginia Tech is going to be a really tough game playing at Virginia Tech, where Virginia Tech is more than likely going to be ranked. And that's going to be the first true test to see if Penn State is a real team or not. And while I don't really expect them to win that game, if Penn State can keep it close, that's a good sign. Even if you don't win that game against Virginia Tech at Virginia Tech, keeping that game close is what I would consider successful-ish way to go into the Big Ten, because the Big Ten is loaded. The Big Ten is the toughest conference to play in college basketball. You have four Big Ten teams in the top 10 currently. in Illinois, Iowa, Wisconsin, and Michigan State. In the first three games of the Big Ten, we play Michigan, Illinois, and I believe Indiana. And those are three really tough games back to back to back. And that is how the season is going to go. There are going to be games where Penn State really just gets crushed because teams like Illinois and Iowa are just better than them. But there are games where this Penn State team can sneak out victories against really quality opponents. And it's going to have to be getting consecutive victories against teams that on paper we shouldn't beat. On paper, they shouldn't beat. If they can get those key wins, that'd be huge. That would be huge for the morale of this team and for any chances they have of making a tournament run in March.
All right. So we have this weekend Seton Hall on Sunday at 8 p.m. Owen, thank you so much for coming and chatting some shooty hoops with us. And we'll look forward to talking to you throughout the rest of the season as Penn State moves forward.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. There you have it. We have some football moving forward. We're playing Rutgers this weekend. It's going to be kind of a make or break for if you can even have a make or break game for Penn State at this point. What do you think about that, Ogden?
I mean, what are we talking about? Football or basketball?
I don't know. Okay. You can just
we should leave that in. Yeah, I mean, the football teams, they need to take any win they can get, and then the basketball team, the season's young, they look good, but they have some fierce competition up ahead. So we're gonna see how this team shapes up this season. As always, this has been an episode of Pauvert State. My name is Matthew Ogden. Thanks for sticking around.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.